Hello, this is Mary Mogan Edwards. I'm an editorial writer with the Columbus Dispatch, and we're talking today with Eric Brown, who is running for re-election to the Columbus Board of Education. It would be his second term. Thanks for being with us, Eric. And we would like you to start out by just reminding listeners a little bit about your career, where you've come from, and what you hope to do on the board.
I'm happy to be here, and thank you for taking the time to provide this service to the public. I'm finishing up my first term as a member of the Columbus School Board, but I've had previous school board experience. Back in my youth, the front end of my career, I served for 15 years as an elected school board member up in the greater Cleveland area. That was a school district called Mayfield, and I loved that service. And that was the toughest thing that I gave up when we moved here to Columbus. And that was in 92. So at the first opportunity, after I retired, I decided this was where I could serve best. I had served as a judge for about a decade in several different courts here. And after retiring from that and going through an illness, once I recovered, was a choice of where can I be most helpful and what do I know and love. So throughout my career, I've had really three strong interests. One of those is public service, one of those is children, and one of those is education. And for this work, they all come together very nicely.
How did your, can you talk about your time on the bench and how that informs your approach to something much more local and specific, which is education governance?
Well, having served about a decade as a judge, a 40-year legal career, and the last 10 or so as a judge, it taught me a lot about reserving judgment, holding back on making decisions until I have all the information before me. Judges have to do that constantly, and I think that's important for any public official. It's not the kind of position where snap judgments are necessary, nor should they be made. The school board's a deliberative body. I also understand that individual school board members have no authority whatsoever. Individually, absolutely none. And that goes for the officers of the board as well. So that when we come together and we meet and we discuss matters in public, that's an opportunity for us to flesh things out and reach good conclusion. My preference has always been to operate by consensus. That's what I did with my colleagues on the court, as one of 17 common pleas court judges, as one of 7 justices on the Supreme Court of Ohio. And it was necessary to have those discussions. I think we need to be doing more of that on the Columbus School Board and have more public discussion of important issues.
Certainly, it's been an issue with this board and going back many boards through lots of personalities. Consensus is often hard to come by, and transparency has been a challenge sometimes. And I know you have been. Do you think it's fair to characterize that you have been often at odds with the current school board president and sort of a faction on the board, and that we've kind of had some factions on the board? And how do you feel about that role, and do you hope for that to change after this year?
I know that will change. I'm confident. And that's one of the things that really excites me this year about running for re-election. There have been a few issues, substantive issues, that the board's been at odds about, and we do those publicly and give reasons and have a conversation. But it's also a matter of style and the way in which the board operates. As I said before, no individual board member, not the president or vice president or anybody else, have individual authority to do anything. President is there basically to run the meeting, make sure everybody is heard, and the other role is a ceremonial one, doing speaking events, for example. And even those can be spread around more than they have been. I think that it's important that we have conversations in the public so that the public can see that we're not always directly on the same page, but that we know how to get along with each other. We know how to respect each other. We know how to reach decisions. And as I said, by consensus, through the 15 years that I served as a school board member in Mayfield Schools, we always operated by consensus. I thought that was far more effective. We reached better decisions, and we showed the community that we know how to work with each other.
There's some concern right now among some candidates for the school board are talking about the importance of having board members with children in the schools. And you haven't ever, right, had children in the Columbus schools?
Correct.
And so can you talk a little bit about that, the importance of there's professional experience and experience in the world versus the personal experience and understanding of being a parent and having a kid in the schools?
Sure. I did that for 15 years. With two daughters that were in the schools. Excuse me. And I thought that was very important. But I also learned that having a mix of people is what's most important. I don't think that having all parents is necessarily a good thing. It's not automatically bad, but we do need to make sure we have a mix, a very diverse group. Fortunately, this year, I'm running as part of a team. We're running a coordinated campaign. Five of us are running, and we all get along. We all respect each other. And importantly, it's a very diverse group. You've now met nearly everybody in that group, and I think you can probably tell that we've got different views on different things. And it's only in discussing matters that we can work things out and reach consensus. So I think that having somebody such as me with my background, I don't currently have kids in school. Our daughters are 40 and 41, and our older daughter, who started off life in 1977 with her six-month-old baby picture serving as my campaign poster for school board the very first time, and she's now serving in Gahanna as a school board president. She's also running for her second term, and she loves the work, but she grew up with it.
What is her name?
Her name's Burl Piccolantonio. It was a good choice for her. We wondered why she'd want to change from brown, but the reality is that it's a memorable name.
Yes, it is. Maybe not the same political weight that brown carries in Ohio. But
well, what we've discovered is that it's a myth that brown carries all kinds of extra weight. I've mm-hmm. run successfully, and I've run without success. It's not an automatic. Piccolantonio happens to be a very memorable name, and it, too, has value.
Well, out of all the issues that the district is facing right now, what do you think is your highest priority?
My first and highest priority is the same as it's been since the beginning when I was first running in 2015, and that is to help our board get to the point that it is fulfilling its role properly. It's an internal rather than an external view, but our board has not done a great job over the years understanding its role vis-a-vis the superintendent of schools. Our job as school board members, as I view it, is to hire a great superintendent to provide goals and provide a mission and give her direction then it's to supply and provide the resources needed for her to do the job of educating the students. And finally, the job is to get out of the way and let her do her job. And that's where I think I disagree with a few of my colleagues more than anything else, is that I view it as they're getting into the weeds at times.
What's an example of that? Where are we getting in the way and getting in the weeds?
There's nothing that directly comes to mind. But I think what's important is that we have hired an outstanding superintendent. She's off to a great start. I'm very happy to have Dr. Talisa Dixon on board. She's showing us that she can do a good job, that she can make decisions on her own, important decisions, because she's a professional educator. And that work is hers. She's the CEO. Our job is to give her direction, provide resources, and allow her to do the job that she was hired for. In the past, I know that some board members at times might interfere with that process, interfere with the job.
It's kind of an eternal debate, isn't it, because a couple boards back tried to get away from micromanaging with policy governance. And then that came to be questioned. But correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding was policy governance is we get out of the way, we set policies and empower the superintendent to carry them out. And then after the data scandal, that was sort of seen as maybe we were a little too hands-off. Is there a balance that you have to find, or what's your recollection of the whole policy governance issue?
Well, I didn't serve on the Columbus School Board during those years, and to this day, I really don't know what policy governance is. I know from serving for 15 years and from doing legal work for school boards and legal work for parents dealing with school boards over many years, I've got a good understanding of what the job is and should be. Certainly asking questions is important. Certainly talking about matters so that everybody's on the same page. Making sure that the superintendent is the face of the schools. Making sure that as she communicates with any board member, that she's communicating with all board members. So that if one asks a question, wants some information, that in turn is responded to by making sure all board members have that. There's a lot of ways in which a board can support its CEO, and that's what we need to learn to do even better than we have. It's no different in some ways to a business organization where there's a CEO, and it's that person's job to run the business. Here, none of us are professional educators. We're lay people. We reflect the community. We discuss issues that are important to the community. We talk about what we want our kids in the school district to learn. We have to provide the resources, and that means that there's a need to look at passing new levies from time to time, and providing funds for building schools, capital expenditures. But it's not an operational role. It's not an administrative role.
Hi, this is Mary Yost. I'm the editor of the editorial page for the Dispatch. And talking about that relationship with the superintendent, you talked about getting out of the way of the superintendent, but is it not also the responsibility of the board to hold the superintendent accountable so that once you've set the goals and kind of set that mission and vision, that you're making sure that the work is carried out? Could you talk a little bit about what the goals are that you're looking to Superintendent Dixon to be working on, and what kind of measures, how will you know if you're meeting the goals? You know, what does success look like?
A very important part of our job, and thank you, Mary, for using the word accountability, because that is very important. And that, too, is part of the fundamental mix of what a board needs to do, is hold the CEO accountable, superintendent of schools in this case. By setting goals, we are saying, here's what we'd like you to accomplish. Here's what we would like for you to accomplish over this period of time. And to the extent possible, we want to have objective goals that can be measured. Now, I'm of the belief that there are good things that can happen that are not easily measured, and we need to do those as well. But everything that we can measure, we should be doing, whether that's how many students are passing the third grade reading guarantee, how many students are graduating, how many students are graduating on time, whether those students are successful after they leave schools, after they leave our schools. We want to make sure that we have strong principals in all the buildings, and make sure we have a good staff that's well-trained. And those are all things that can be measured, and those are all things that we will set as goals for the superintendent, and then we do and must hold her accountable. We do something similar with our treasurer, who also reports directly to the board, and with our internal auditor, the third person who reports directly to the school board. But we don't do that with others. That's something for the superintendent to do with her team. We also have to make sure, and we can do a better job than we've done, on keeping the focus where it belongs, which is on our kids. Student education is key. That's the business we're in. And we have to do a great job. And every single decision that comes before the board, we have to think about from the perspective of, does this help our kids? Does this help academic achievement? Does this help prepare our students for their lives after they graduate?
So there are specific metrics then for those things that you're looking for, X percent of graduates, X percent of them to be graduating on time, so many children are meeting that third grade guarantee, and then if those metrics aren't met, then you have a conversation. I mean, I'm just trying to understand
Yes.
a little bit more about the specific kinds of measures and where the priorities are.
Well, we have a process with each of our three direct reports where we set goals for the year, and we make sure that those goals are capable of being measured and reviewed, and then we sit down at least once a year to do a full-blown evaluation and discuss, have those goals been met? Have they not been met? For those that have not, are we moving in the right direction? Are we needing to provide some additional resource? Are there some other reasons to explain it, and how do we get back on track? All of those are an important part of the process.
And just to understand a little bit the difference between your service now on the Columbus School Board and in Mayfield, what would you say would be the biggest similarities and differences?
The issues that we deal with are precisely the same. For the most part, we're dealing with academic achievement. We're dealing with hiring and training good teachers and other staff. And they're all important. We deal with raising funds through tax issues on the ballot. It's important that we deal with being frugal with public dollars. We need to be good stewards of our resources. That's always important. And we need to focus on what our role is versus that of the administration and CEO. So all of those kinds of things are precisely the same. The scope here is much bigger. This is, Columbus is the largest school district in Ohio with over 50,000 students. And I think that because of that, we see more of various issues and problems, but it's not different in nature. It's only different in number. The suburbs have poverty just as the city does, but the city has poverty in much greater numbers. And that's one of the issues that presents a great, huge obstacle to student learning. If students can't get to school, if they don't have a place to sleep, if they don't have clothing, they aren't fed, or they have health issues that are unaddressed, they're not going to be ready to learn. And there's very little we can do in the classroom to address learning until we've solved those other things, and we need to work with the community to do that. That too is something that I learned from my previous experience and from my life experience, is that we're not alone in this. Columbus has a huge, well-earned reputation for partnerships, public-private partnerships, and we need to do a better job of working with the business community, the nonprofits in the community, on how we can work together and solve and address some of these issues. One of the things that we can do much better that hasn't been done in the past is we can let the business community, who want to be helpful, they've always wanted to be helpful, but let them know exactly what we need, how they can help. That's not been done, and sometimes they are willing to help support something, but they choose what that is. We've got a very clear strategic mission. Here's what we're going to focus on for this year.
So what are some of the things that you could use specifically from the business community that maybe they don't know about?
We can use internships. Many, many businesses are capable of having students come in, spend some time possibly doing something productive, maybe just shadowing. But in any of those cases, they're getting exposure to the careers they may be thinking about in the future. They're getting mentors, and they're getting experience in the world that they'll be heading into. I think that's very important. Mentorship is also important. Ideally, love to see every single one of our 50,000 plus students have a mentor that can often stay with them for many years, perhaps throughout their school career. In fact, the Dispatch itself is somebody that I think we need to reach out to much better than we have in the past and say, let's sit down and talk with each other about how you can be helpful as a large business, as a large employer in the community. You can work with our students perhaps on some writing skills. They're good careers in the newspaper business, even still. And I think that it would benefit many of our students or our school newspapers to spend some time with some of your reporters or some of your editors or some of the people in the business end of newspaper production. And I don't know exactly how that would work, but I think we need to start a conversation, and that would involve our superintendent. From our perspective as board members, we want to encourage as much use of the community's resources as we can.
One of the unique perspectives that you have is that you, although you weren't part of the decision by the Supreme Court on school funding. You've served on that body, the state's top court that some 20 years ago said school funding in Ohio is unconstitutional and needs to be fixed. You've got a wealth of school board experience. Have you had an opportunity to look at any of the school funding plans that have been proposed in the state legislature? And do you have a perspective on some of the additional funds that were provided in the last state budget for schools in Ohio?
yes, thank you. And I do have a long history with school finance, having lived through all of the DeRolf decisions, and I'm very familiar with those, having served, as you say, on the Supreme Court of Ohio, and saw what can and cannot be done from that vantage. I also studied school finance in college. I took 15 credit hours of, or 16 credit hours of work specifically in school finance up at Cleveland State University with a professor of economics who taught that. And we worked in those days on the same issue we're facing today. And that is, how do we fund schools in Ohio? And we took our hand at that time and tried to develop a new formula. And it didn't go anywhere, but it was interesting to work on, and I learned a lot. The work that Senators Bob Kupp and Bob Patterson are working on now is very important. They're both good people. I worked with Bob Kupp as a fellow justice on the Supreme Court. I like him a great deal. He's thoughtful, and I know he's trying to do his best with this very, very difficult problem. I think their approach has been a good one, which is to try to figure out for the first time ever what it costs to provide a basic education to students in Ohio. That's something that's been talked about for decades. I was in college in the 70s, and that's what we spent time working on, and it's just never been done. They're trying to do that and then to adjust that for a lot of things. What's been particularly problematic for Columbus schools and lots of others across the state is the cap. What happens is that there's a formula that provides dollars for schools. Some schools from year to year, depending on a number of things, would get would have money that comes from the state reduced. And what the state did in order to prevent that from becoming a problem, because if you budget from year to year, costs go up, is that they established a guarantee for many school districts. And even if the formula says you only get $10,000, by guaranteeing that you won't get less than the year before, it can take care of those schools. But at the other end, we have schools like Columbus that have a cap. Is that if the formula works out to provide a great deal of additional revenue, even though we need it desperately, the cap serves to prevent us from getting that. And it's perhaps $80 million or more per year that we don't receive because of the cap. The problem is that 80% of schools throughout Ohio are on either the cap or the guarantee. Which means that the formula really doesn't work anymore with such a small number of school districts that actually receive the amount that's calculated out. Now, there's another wrinkle in all of this. There's many. The subject of school finance is challenging. It's complex, and that's unfortunate. But we also are dealing with funds that flow through to charter schools. And as those funds that the General Assembly directed flow through public schools to the charters, they take with them some additional money. So if there's $10,000 from the state per student in our district, and a student leaves us to go to a charter school, it might cost us $11,000 or $12,000. It's not just the money we receive for that student, but it's additional funds. And that's very, very difficult to deal with. It has had a significant effect. I have no problems with the idea of well-run, accountable charter schools, but they shouldn't be funds flowing through us and taking more. I think that the legislature should fund those directly.
And is that in Cutt-Patterson? I'm thinking it was.
Yes.
Should the Columbus Board be taking any kind of more active role than it is in advocating for what you want to happen to that bill? There's still a bill out there, right?
There's still work to be done. Cutt-Patterson was initially intended to be part of the budget that was adopted, and they just couldn't get it done, and there were some issues that it was being rushed. They were going to study it through the summer and come back at it this coming week when they come back to work, but it's not ready. They really needed some time over the summer and took a break from it, and then they'll get back at it. I'm hopeful that they will be successful. It's not ideal, but if we wait for the ideal, we'll never get to improvement.
Has the board, the Columbus board, weighed in any way with a statement, a declaration? Should you do that?
We have.
Give your wish list? Is there a wish list of changes?
We've been very actively involved. Some of that is public, some of that is not public. We are part of a group of school districts in the state known as the Big Eight, which consists of the eight largest school districts in Ohio. We happen to be the largest, and a lot of work is done by that body with the legislators who are involved in helping to shape this. As you know, most of that work is not done in the hearing rooms. Most of that work is done behind the scenes. And we participate. We have a full-time staff person whose job is to be involved with all that process. And we have had a good opportunity for involvement, both as part of the Big Eight and directly.
Hi, this is Alyssa Widman-Neese, education reporter at the Dispatch. Earlier you mentioned the importance of being a good steward of public dollars. Wanted to talk with you about an issue that's been brought up frequently at recent board meetings, which is travel for professional development of board members. I know that you have no shortage of thoughts on it based on what I've heard at the meetings. So what's it been like voicing those opinions at the meetings, even if you're on the minority side when it comes to the vote?
You know, your question reminds me, and I'll get directly to it, but it reminds me of one of the differences between my service when I was just out of high school, and I had started as a school board member when I was 22, having graduated from Mayfield High School and working with former teachers and things, to my status now, having retired as a judge, having 40 years of legal experience, having a lot of life experience, having had children grow up, and now having three grandsons who are also in public school. Very different. And I'm at a stage where I can truly be free to speak my mind. I had judicial roles and lawyer roles on me for a good part of my career. I also had the idea that I'm going to be on the ballot again. and I need to behave. And it's not that I don't behave now, but I am more free than I've been to really focus on what's important and what's right. On this issue of travel, first of all, we're not necessarily talking about huge dollars relative to our budget, but we're talking about significant dollars, and we're talking about symbolic money. I think it's important for us as a board to demonstrate frugality, to demonstrate that we can be good stewards of public resources, of tax dollars, and for us to select carefully those opportunities where we're really going to get meaningful benefit for our kids and for our schools versus just another conference because it's in a nice place. And that's how I operated throughout my 15 years. I went to a couple of national conventions early on and saw what there was to see. And I've been back and touched base with some of those. But we can do a lot right here. More than ever, because of technology, we can do a lot online, communicating, learning with each other. And it's not necessary for all school board members to attend a conference, or even for a large number. One or two can go and bring back information. The Council of Great City Schools is a tremendous resource for staff as well as for the board itself. And we do need to work with them. But I don't agree that we need to send four or five people to a conference just because they're having another annual conference. It's an area where I do disagree. I think it's especially important when we were in a position of cutting expenses a few years back. We too need to do that ourselves. When we're in a position of being in negotiations with our teachers, I think we need to demonstrate that we can conserve resources. I believe strongly in professional development. Education, I said, was one of the three things that has motivated me throughout my life. And there's a lot to learn, and I'm always continuing to learn, whether that's reading or talking with people or attending events. But there are ways to do that a lot less expensively than what our school boards have done in the past.
I know another issue that was brought up, especially as negotiations were ongoing by the teachers union, was tax abatements that the city has given to corporations and how that affects the funding that Columbus City Schools receives. Didn't know if you had any positions on what the board can do regarding tax abatements and whether you support them or think that there should be less of them.
Tax abatements, like school finance, is a challenging and complex subject, and it can't be done with a simple yes or no. I served back in the 80s, before school boards even had a right to be notified that a city was going to consider tax incentives. And as a school board member and as a school board at that time, we fought that we wanted to be notified and we wanted some say in what they were doing with dollars that would otherwise be coming to the schools. I guess in some ways we got what we were asking for back then, and I'm not sure that was a good thing. However, only some tax abatement matters come before schools.
Right.
The vast majority never do. They're matters for city government and economic development people there, and only those that exceed certain numbers or numbers of years will even come to us for consideration. We have to look at those individually. You can't provide a yes, they're good, no, they're bad as a group. You have to look at them and say, is this a piece of property that is going to be developed anyway and provide revenue, whether there's tax incentives or not? In some cases, and the Cover My Meds is a good example. That site would not have been developed. We were convinced, and I continued to believe, it would not have been developed if there had not been some financial incentives, which means that that property is producing no tax revenue for the schools, no tax revenue for anybody. Once they came in, even with incentives, we receive one half of the payroll tax flowing to the school starting in year one, starting as employees are hired. Even the construction workers, we receive some of that. We also, in a period of time, often 10 years, sometimes 15, we will begin to receive the property tax revenue directly to the schools. And had that development not occurred, we'd be receiving nothing. The way the issue has been presented to the public is too simple. It's not just a yes, no, good, bad kind of question. There are trade-offs. What we have done, and I am strongly supportive of, is that we also work with the industries that are coming in, the businesses that are coming in. Cover My Meds, again, as an example. And we talk about internships, and we talk about what services they can provide directly to our students. And we did that with a tax incentive that was given early on to Pizzuti, who developed a project out near Reckenbacher. And Pizzuti has been very, very good to the schools. The company has been very good to the community. And we knew, because they're here, because they've been here a long time, because we personally know Ron Pizzuti, that he's going to do for the community and for the schools what he says he's going to do. So we make that part of the deal. If our approval's needed on those few projects where it's needed, we want some additional value for our kids. So we get the best of both. Are there some tax incentives that would not be good? Of course. And if we saw a project requesting abatement and it didn't make any sense to us, or there'd be development that occurs anyway, we're not going to agree with that.
Hi, this is Alan Miller, editor of the paper, and I want to go back to the financial question and tack on one about WCBE and the oversight or lack thereof that led to the discovery that they were close to $900,000 behind in their payments to NPR, and what the school board did to make that make good on that debt, but also what is being done to make sure that there's oversight, and maybe you can enlighten us on whether there'll be changes in that newsroom or that radio station.
Thank you, Alan. I think that it's very unfortunate what occurred with WCBE, and we knew when those problems arose that, yes, NPR was owed that money, that we were responsible, that we needed to address it. And we did that. But at the same time, we have taken a much closer hands-on management with respect to the station and its operation. And we are truly managing that and overseeing it. And while we're doing that, we are in the process of studying what comes next. We agreed and we announced, and we're in the middle of a year-long process of study and research. Part of the question for me is, we're not, Columbus City Schools is not in the radio business, and I'm not sure that it makes sense for us to be in businesses that don't match our strategic mission, that don't match why we're in existence, and that we're here to help our students and achieve academic achievement and improve it and prepare them for careers. There are conceivably opportunities to do that with a radio station, but it's not something that has been done in Columbus for decades. I believe that once upon a time that might have occurred. Whether there's work that fits within our mission today is what's being studied. And at the end of the year, we'll get recommendations on whether it makes sense for Columbus Schools to continue to own the station, to own the license, which has significant value, or to do something different. But just because it, you know, this is not an investment like Franklin County has with the Clippers, where that franchise has dramatically increased in value over the years. It's not that. And if it doesn't serve our purpose in our primary mission of educating students, then maybe we shouldn't be in that business.
Well, Mr. Brown, is there anything that we have not asked that you would like to cover before we run out of time here?
Well, only this. We're doing something different this year. Very thrilled with our new superintendent. We are, for the first time in anybody's memory, running as a team. We have five candidates. There's me. There's our two recently appointed candidates, two recently appointed board members, Jennifer Adair and James Ragland, who are running with me. And we also have Tina Pierce and Carol Beckerly. And the five of us have worked hard to make sure that we can work together. It's not simple, but we've been learning and we've been showing the community that we can do that. I think that's important because when we begin to govern, all of us next year, we'll have practiced that for the year and we will be able to perform and do that and work by consensus and show the superintendent the kind of support that is proper for a school board member to show.
Great. Thank you very much for coming by.
Thank you.